recent study by MIT researchers shows that only about half of our perceived friendships are mutual. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk about why that is. We are going to talk about the true meaning of friendship, how it affects us, and why we need strong friendships in our lives. And we are going to welcome your questions. We're going to welcome your experiences for our guest expert, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So do you have a lot of friends, or do you have only a few close ones? Do you have a best friend? What do you look for in a friend, and what does friendship mean to you? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Very happy to welcome our guest, Alexander Nehamas, a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University. His latest book is On Friendship, and we saw him quoted in a recent article in the New York Times on friendship. Good morning. I'm sorry, I have the wrong button. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. So what does it mean to call someone a friend? What is a friend?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it? It's very difficult to say in general what counts as a friend or who counts as a friend. I think there's one aspect of the relationship, though, that is pretty crucial. A friend must be someone who is more than useful to you. It's somebody who is not simply someone that you can use to accomplish what you already know that you want. It's somebody whom, as we say, you love for themselves, which means that you don't use them simply as a means to your own ends. It's somebody whose own ends, whose own desires and whose own values and whose own concerns you take as if they were your own. And therefore, something very important happens through friendship. If I have a relationship that depends on use, like, as we say in philosophy, an instrumental relationship with somebody, say a waiter, I know what I want from the waiter before I meet him, I or her. I want to be served good food in a timely way without having to any more trouble. It doesn't matter to me who that waiter is. As long as somebody does the job well, I couldn't care who the particular person in question is. With a friend, it's never like that, because with a friend, I don't exactly know what I want from them. In fact, what I want from a friend is for them to help me change in certain ways. So when we become friends with somebody, we don't hold ourselves constant as we do in an instrumental relationship. We put ourselves out, and therefore we also become very vulnerable to this other person, because we allow them, we give them power over ourselves. And so friendship is always a kind of two-faced relationship. A very good friendship can do wonderful things for somebody. But sometimes, and that's really an interesting and sort of disturbing fact, actually, sometimes a very good friendship can be very bad for us. For example, there's a proverb that says, a friend helps you move house. A good friend helps you move a body.
Talk a little bit about this article that you were quoted in. Do your friends even like you? Why would there be even a question whether our friends like us or not?
Well, that was, a very depressing article, that we can be so inaccurate about what the feelings of other people are towards us. This is a very disturbing fact. I don't think we really can claim that somebody we like but who doesn't like us back is a friend. It's, as you put it very well, it's somebody we consider a friend, somebody we think of as a friend. And the interesting thing here is that even though these people aren't our friends, the fact that they are being nice enough to us so that we don't realize that they are not really liking us is a very good social mechanism, right? Because it allows us to cooperate with people. Now, of course, if we need something more from them than what they're willing to give us, then we're probably going to find out that they weren't our friends after all, or that if they were friends, they were much less intimately connected to us than we think we were connected to them. Mm. And that also can be a great disappointment.
So describe why you think friendship is beautiful.
It's beautiful in the following way. It's like beauty, and I think it's also like art. The values of things like, of institutions like friendship and art and beauty are incredibly important values, but they're not the values of morality. The values of morality are values like justice, values that we want to apply impartially to everybody. It doesn't matter to us who the person is who is being treated with justice. Everybody should be treated with justice. A friend, however, is somebody about whom we make all kinds of distinctions between our friends and other people. I don't treat everybody else the way I treat my friends. I separate them from the rest of the world, and in separating them, I separate myself as well. The same thing happens, say, with beautiful art. When I like something, I want a few people around me to like it, my friends and people I admire, but I don't want everybody to admire it. We don't want everybody in the world to have the same taste. In the same way, we don't want everybody in the world to have the same friends. That's a very big difference between the values of morality and these other values that are much closer to the values of art.
So talk a little bit more about what is the difference between friends and acquaintances?
Well, I think it's only a difference in degree, frankly. I think some of us have, I hope everybody, has some very, very close friends. And then we have friends who are not quite as close and friends who are not very close at all. And friends whom we only see very rarely. We meet them once a few months to have a drink or a coffee and find out how things are going. It seems to me that it's not as if there are different kinds of friendship. There's one thing. It's called friendship, and it's more or less intimate. And what makes the difference, I think, to the intimacy involved is that the closer a friendship is, the more aspects of your life it gets involved with. So a friend whom I see every now and then, very casually, is only involved in very few aspects of my life. We have certain subjects we talk to when we get together. We talk about what this or the other. But a good friend, a close friend, is somebody with whom you really don't know what you're going to talk about or what is going to come up. Yeah. You're always open to them. And that, I said, is both an exhilarating feeling to feel that there is somebody you can do that with, and also very dangerous.
You said that friendship is vital to the human condition. What makes friendship so necessary for us?
Well, it's very difficult for me to imagine a person living a fulfilling life without some friends, without some people with whom, again, one can be as open as one can be with one's friends. And also, a friendship is essential, or friendship in general, is essential to forming our own selves, to forming who we come to be as we go through life. Without friends, it's very difficult to have a sense, in a way, of who you are. Because who your friends are, as the proverb goes, or the old proverb says, you know, tell me who your friends are, show me your friends, and I'll show you yourself. Friends are essential to becoming the persons we actually are. Without friends, that development that is absolutely necessary for people is either impossible or very, very difficult. We need friends to be able to bounce ideas and desires and plans and dreams off. Yeah. And that we need.
So is it better for me to have a best friend or a couple of close friends or a large circle of friends?
Well, ideally, you'd have friends at every level, or at least at some levels. Here's another way in which this friendship is like art. There are novels or books or pieces of music or whatever with which one can live a whole life. For me, in particular, say, it is Proust, the great French writer, somebody I return to again and again and again. Then there are mystery writers with whom I spend one evening. a very intense evening, but then I don't ever read the book again. And there, in between, there are other authors like Jane Austen, say, or somebody like that, whom I return to every now and then, but not quite as often as I return to Proust. So our friends have the same kind of, there's the same kind of continuum there between our very close friends with whom we spend a long part of our life and a very broad part of our life, less important friends, and finally friends whom, as I said, we have very casual relationships with.
Our guest is Alexander Nehamas, a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University. His latest book is On Friendship. He was quoted recently in a New York Times article, Do Your Friends Even Like You? And we're talking about the philosophy of friendship and wondering if you have a best friend? Do you have many close friends? Do you have a large circle of friends? What are your thoughts and questions about friendship? How important are your friends to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
We are talking about friendship this hour and the value of friendship. And wondering if you have any questions about friendship. Do you think you have enough friends? Do you find it hard to make friends? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. How important are your friends to you? What kind of friend do you think you are? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest is Alexander Nehamas, a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University, and his latest book is On Friendship. Our lines are full, so let's go to Warner and Woodruff. Hi, Warner.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead. What is your story about friendship?
I went to kindergarten with a bunch of kindergarten through eighth grade and a little bit of high school. And I've had good friends, and some of us have drifted apart, and some of us got into arguments. But my interest is I have a sibling that my parents taught me to love, and I do, and she does. It's my sister. We both say we love each other, but we don't like to talk to each other. I'd rather talk to friends as they come and go, but I thank God I still have some old friends. But I stick with her. You know, I feel loyalty.
What's your connection, Warner, with your sister is not your friend, but she's your sister, so you'll stick with her?
I love her, but I don't like talking to her that much versus my friends, which I would rather talk to on a day-by-day basis or whenever we communicate. But my sister and I, we still get along, and once in a while we're friends, but we seem to have a lot more conflict. It's far less relaxing.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about family and friendship, Alexander?
Sure. Family relationships are very complex because these are people, generally speaking, our own family are people we spend a huge amount of time with. And we get to know aspects of them that are very difficult to communicate to an outsider, even if that outsider is a very good friend. It takes a very long time to explain friendships and, in particular, family relationships. They're very complicated. By and large, my sense is that when you have strong family relationships, they depend very much on a kind of love that your caller has spoken about, but they also involve extreme cases of competition, of competitiveness, of Competitiveness not only vis-a-vis or against the world in general, but also for the love of the parents, for the attention of the parents. That complicates the relationship very much. And even if we don't like our family all that much, we still have an independent reason for being loyal to them, as again your caller mentioned. One is loyal to one's family, even if the relationship with a particular member is not the same kind of relationship that one has with one's close friends.
Warner also mentioned that he has still has a group of friends that he made in childhood. I happen to also have a core group of friends who are from my neighborhood in my hometown, and we still see each other here, you know, almost 60 years later. What how common is that?
Well, I don't know what the statistics on that would be, but I can speak for myself as you did for you. I went to boarding school in Greece when I was growing up, and the friends I made there and the friends these friends made are an incredibly tight group even today. They meet regularly with one another. They have houses next near one another. Each one has christened the other's children or helped marry them as a best man or best lady, you know, what is it, maid of honor or whatever it is. It's a very important thing, I think, to have friends from childhood. These are people who know us in a way that no one else really can, because especially when we are young, our relationships are very stormy, if I can say that. You know, children fight a lot with one another. And in fighting, again, they show aspects of themselves that are not easy to see in other situations. So you can feel very, very comfortable with people like that because they know your weaknesses and clearly they don't mind them since they're still your friends.
Yeah. Is it easier for us to make friends when we're younger and harder for us to make friends when we're older?
Absolutely. Notice how quickly and how important and painful friendship can be to children and how quickly they change friends. Why is that? I think it's because, as I said earlier, friendship helps you become who you are. Friendship helps you try out different ways of acting, of being, different kinds of personality. Well, children are constantly looking for new ways to be. And the friends that they made a month ago may not any longer be the same kind of person that they were then, or the person who made those friends may have changed radically. I think the same facts explain the fact that after about 40, it's very difficult to make new friends. We'd usually say that's because, oh, you know, family obligations and work obligations, or get tired a lot. No. It's because a new friendship means a serious change in our life and our personality. And after the age of 40 or so, not everybody is willing to consider such a serious change. So it's very difficult to make a new friend because when you make a new friend, you know that you're going to end up somewhere different from where you are now.
Let's take Becky in Madison. Hi, Becky.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. It is just the opposite of the previous caller, and actually my closest friends are my mom and my two sisters. And I consider myself very blessed. But one of the other challenges, is, as you just mentioned, is it seems more difficult to maintain friendships in this day and age with school schedules and parental responsibilities and work responsibilities. And I'm just wondering if you've seen it as a common theme in your research.
Yes, I think it is more difficult. We have more ways of communicating than we ever had before in our history, but we also, I think, have lives that are much, much more busy than they tended to be earlier on. That makes it both easier to keep in touch and more difficult to keep in touch in a serious, deep, honest way. So we are faced with a dilemma here. Easier to connect with people, and that's why people can have thousands of so-called friends on Facebook, easier to connect, but the relationships are not quite as intimate or, textured. There's not enough texture to them. There's not enough differentiation.
Our guest is Alexander Nehamas, a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University. His latest book is on friendship, and we are talking about friendship, the value of friendship, and wondering what friendship means to you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So one thing we've talked about making friends, and what about losing friendships? that happens too, right?
It's one of the worst things that can happen to us sometimes when a friendship breaks up. It really can discomfort our whole life, every aspect of it. And it's what happens when friends break up. I mean, sometimes it can be just one-sided or whatever. But even when it is actually one-sided, what happens is both personalities are involved. You know, very often, both in cases where you are having an erotic or a romantic, as I say, relationship with somebody and with a friend, you all of a sudden find that this person is no longer engaging to you, no longer interesting to you. And very often when you want to stop a relationship like that and in trying to make the other person feel better about it, you say, oh, it's not me. It's not you. It's me. But that doesn't really help. Why not? Because if you say it's me, what you're meaning to say is that you don't like who you are when you are with this person, or you don't like what you have become because of that person. And by the same token, you say you don't like who they are and who they have become. So whatever you say, you're repudiating both of you when you're breaking a relationship. And that can really hurt, especially if one of the two people involved has not realized the change that has taken place and see themselves as they had been before and say, but why? What have I done? Well, it's not what you've done. It's what you have become, and even more important, what the other person has become. And if they want to move away from that, they will want to move away from you as well.
Lisa in Plover is with us now. Hello, Lisa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I want to tell the short version of an interesting friendship that stemmed from a relationship. My girlfriend and I had a really ugly breakup, and there was a fair amount of immaturity and not really knowing who we were as individuals. And it was a public and ugly breakup. So in the time that we were apart, we had rediscovered things that we had lost in the relationship and matured as individuals, so that when I received a card from her waving the peace flag, essentially, and looking for some sort of reattachment, we actually came together as best friends. And today, we don't even say that we're each other's ex-girlfriend. We just say that we're our, you know, that's my best friend. And that came from an attitude change about attachments and expectations and a lot of accepting and letting go.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, and just to be clear, you are now best friends with your former girlfriend. You are no longer in a romantic relationship.
Yes. And I have to say, this friendship is light years different and in many ways better than the romantic relationship. I mean, we know a significant amount about each other. We even know the ugly parts that we didn't want to be as people, and we had to be apart to shed that and to be more mature socially and spiritually and to be able to come back and actually be, for lack of a better term, adults about a friendship.
Very, very good. Thank you for sharing that, Alexander.
That's a very interesting story. It's a very interesting story. And I actually understand what your caller is talking about. There is a, you know, you have a romantic relationship with somebody that breaks up. You're extremely hurt by that. Both people are usually extremely hurt. But then as time goes on, and as your caller said, as you become more mature, at least about that relationship, you take some distance from it and you see it from a different point of view. You see other things about it that you hadn't seen before. When you get together again, those things that had made you dislike one another or lose interest in one another simply become irrelevant. And knowing that whether this other person is still like that or not, that it doesn't matter to you, that you accept them as they have become, as they are now, is an incredibly sort of satisfying, fulfilling feeling. These people are people you know in ways that you don't know your friends with whom you have not had such a relationship. And that gives a very serious added dimension to the relationship. So, yes, I think it's a wonderful thing when this happens.
Thank you again, Lisa. What are some of the downfalls and risks of friendships? You said that friendships can be, in a way, dangerous.
Yes, and that's why we always tell people, especially young people, you know, be careful about who your friends are. The danger are that one of the dangers is that a good friend may inadvertently, perhaps, cause a lot of harm. To the other friend, or two friends without realizing it may cause a lot of harm to each other. Now, there are two ways that this harm can appear in the long run. One is when you realize it, when you realize that this friendship has harmed me, has not been good for me, and then you just, you know, move away. You say, what a pity that I spent all this time with this person who wasn't somebody I should have spent time with, or who no longer is somebody I should spend time with, or whatever. But there's a worse situation. The worse situation is when you are being harmed by someone, and as you're being harmed, your standards also change. So you end up in a kind of terrible situation, but your standards are such that you think that situation is fine. So you think you're happy and flourishing when in fact you're not, and you don't realize it, and you keep going that way.
Yeah.
And that, I think, can be very dangerous.
How can you tell if you're in a bad friendship, a toxic friendship?
Well, you don't always. That's part of the problem. And that, in a way, is the other side of the coin of the study that the New York Times wrote about, right? When you like somebody, but they like you much less than you do, well, or less, sometimes they may not like you at all. Sometimes your liking them makes you particularly vulnerable to them, and they can hurt you in ways that other people can't. So it's extremely I shouldn't say extremely, that overstates the case. But friendship always brings dangers with it. And that's another way in which it is like art and beauty, because beautiful things and great works of art can also cause harm, even if we don't always like to admit that.
Yeah. Well, on the upside, what are the major benefits we receive from a friendship?
Well, one thing, for me, the most important thing that friendship does is that it helps us become individuals. One of your callers used that word, individuals. I think it's crucial in this relation, in this context. If you and I are friends, for example, by definition, we are not going to be friends of some other people. So what friendship does is to separate us to some extent from the rest of the world. That separation is something that pushes us towards becoming different, towards leading a life that is not exactly the same as the life of everybody else around us. So friendship, A, helps us become a particular person, and secondly, helps us become a particular person that is seriously different from the people around us. And that, I think, is a very important benefit. But to become an individual, to become somebody who has their own way of moving through the world.
Let's take a call from Kevin, who is driving through Wausau. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Yes, go ahead.
I guess I just wanted to comment on the intensity of friendships. You guys had said that earlier. I have military friends, you know, I got out 2 years ago, and the bond that I have with those guys is something that I haven't been able to find again, even with my closest friends from childhood today. And I guess I wanted to hear what your speaker had to say about misery loves company sort of mindset, you know, suffering somebody or enduring things. You just kind of build that bond, friendship.
Yeah, going through all sorts of danger, too, together, and counting on each other to save one another's lives sometimes. Alexander?
Well, that's these relationships, again, are extraordinarily intense and powerful. And when you find that you have to depend on other people as absolutely as you have to depend on them in certain situations, these people become extremely important to you because they will know, so to speak, when you are in danger, not just in physical danger, but in mental danger as well. They'll be able to help you out. And in situations of extremity like that, helping people out is very important. When you realize that you can depend on someone else for your own life and that that other person is willing to endanger themselves in order to save you, that's an incredibly powerful feeling to know that you can rely like that on another person. It's, in a way, if I can say, it's a smaller way of what people feel when they think that God is there to protect them.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for the call. We are talking about friendship. We're talking about good and bad friendships, the benefits and risks of friendships, and we're welcoming your questions and your thoughts about the value of friendship. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is philosopher Alexander Nehamas. He is also the author of the book on friendship. This is the Ideas Network.
Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Do you have a friend, a best friend, lots of friends, only a few close ones? What do you look for in a friend? What kind of friend do you think you are? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. When's the last time you made a new friend? When's the last time you lost a friend? We are talking about friendship with our guest author and philosopher, Alexander Nehamas. He's a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University. His latest book is On Friendship. He was quoted recently in a New York Times article, "Do Your Friends Even Like You?" Brad in Mequon is with us. Hello, Brad.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I learned from my father, who was a great one for writing letters and notes, and up until he was in his early 80s, he would probably write 80 or 90 letters and notes a month, obviously more after he retired. I'm in my 60s, and I probably write several dozen letters or notes, handwritten letters or notes, every month to three or four dozen people, and they range age from mid-20s to early 90s. And I found from my father that the best way to have friends who really are good friends is to be a good friend and to reach out. And I will write, and they will email back, and we communicate. And sometimes people marvel at it, but I think the thing about friendship is if you really want it, it has to be intentional, and it's not an afterthought. It's like, instead of watching a movie, I'm going to spend 2 hours, I'm going to write four or five letters. And so that's my comment, and I will listen off the air.
Thank you for sharing that. We got to maintain these friendships, Alexander.
That, I think it's wonderful what your caller said, that he still actually writes letters. That we do, unfortunately, much less of that these days. And letters are very different, I think, from, say, the social media. Because in Facebook, for example, and many of the other social media, what we show to people is something that we show, generally speaking, to everyone. I mean, we say we show it just to our friends, our Facebook friends or whatever, but that's a very large group of people. When you write a letter, however, you write something to the particular individual to whom you're writing. You're not giving information that you don't mind sharing with anywhere between 10 and thousands of people, depending on how many of those Facebook friends you have. You write something that is specific to the person you're writing. You explain, you express the things that in that particular relationship you're used to expressing, or sometimes you express something new that your friend hasn't seen before, and you complicate and renew the friendship. So writing letters, I think, is and has always been absolutely crucial for friendship. Many friendships, especially in older times when once you moved somewhere, you never saw the people from where you came again, friendship was maintained through correspondence. And we have countless cases of people who have maintained a friendship for a large part of their life through correspondence. And so it's wonderful to hear that somebody's still doing it.
Yeah, that's not writing letters. Well, you mentioned Facebook. How has social media in general affected our friendships?
You know, I don't know that it has affected them very much. You know, who knows? I mean, that's a sociological fact. I'm not competent to judge that. But it seems to me what Facebook does and the social media more generally do is they allow friendships that were already established to continue, to maintain themselves. Because just by keeping in touch this way, the two friends are still in each other's mind. I don't think it's particularly good at creating new friendships unless something happens and the people involved get to meet one another and then communicate independently of the Facebook or the Instagram or whatever else, whatever the platform is. Because again, a friendship is always a relationship between two individuals. It's not a relationship or between five individuals, doesn't matter, but they are very specific persons. When I write something on Facebook, I can't even remember whom I'm communicating with, right? I mean, I don't remember who my friends, my Facebook friends are. And yet, if you ask me to tell you who my friends are, I probably could tell you, and I would be 52% right. More than that, as the times showed.
Yeah, I'm wondering, too. I don't know, social media, we also are, you know, people know every, you know, move you make if you share a lot like I do. But I don't. I avoid writing about politics. I've read a lot of people who say that their friendships have been severed because of different political views.
Politics is one of the most common causes, I think, for the breakup of friendships. Why? Because one's political views actually permeate a lot of other things that one believes or values. So when you find that you have a serious political disagreement with your friend, you find out that there are many, many other things on which you don't see eye to eye, and that some very fundamental values that you have, you're not sharing with this other person. So the more sort of permeating a particular issue is, and politics usually are very permeating issues like that, the more disappointing and the more frightening, in a way, a serious difference can be.
Yeah. Because is it how important are shared values and ideologies with a friendship?
That's a very, very interesting question because, you know, it's been ever since the ancient Greeks, people have been wondering, is it that we want to be friends with people who are like us, or is it that we want to be friends with people who are unlike us?
Yeah.
Right? And no one has ever quite figured that out. And to me, it seems, by and large, it's a combination of the two. We do want our friends to share some fundamental values with us, but we also don't want them to be clones of us, or we don't want to be clones of them. We want them to have things, to show us things that we are not able to see by ourselves. My best friend, for example, is, among other things, a very practical person. So he lives in California. Whenever he comes to Princeton to visit me, he always fixes something in my house. He's very good at that. I'm very bad at it. By the same token, he doesn't know as much about clothes as I do, so I help him with his wardrobe, or I give him ties or whatever. Those are two very, very different capacities. I have one, he has the other, and we complement each other. By the same token, he likes to go outdoors and chop wood and things like that, which I would never in my life do. But I enjoy seeing him doing it because it's so important to him to do that and fits so well with the rest of his personality. You see, so it's, I don't think we can tell whether it's the similarity of value or the difference. It's a combination of both.
We are talking about friendship and how we make friends, how we keep friends, how important friends are to our lives. And we're welcoming your questions and your thoughts and your experiences with friendship. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Alexander Nehamas is a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University. His latest book is On Friendship, and our next caller is Anna in Fox Point. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I have a question for you this morning about friendships where there could also potentially be love and kind of how that could complicate a friendship. I know this could apply to relationships of, you know, same-sex friendships and attraction, but for in my case, for example, when I was in high school, I had several friends who were boys, and there could have been a situation where they would say to me, I can't be your friend anymore, and my mother would say to me, well, don't you know, can't be friends with boys. There's always going to be love somewhere, and it might complicate the friendship, and so the friendship wasn't real. If it didn't develop into love, then that's why your boyfriend left. I'm curious what your take is on a friendship where there could be love but isn't love, and can a friendship still exist?
Yeah, that wasn't that the big question that was raised by When Harry Met Sally, Alexander?
Right. And, of course, it had a happy ending. I think there can be happy endings in those situations. I don't think that, romantic love and the love of friendship are necessarily incompatible. They necessarily hurt one another. I do think they come, what your caller said, they do certainly complicate the situation. And they often can be very negative, especially because what people can sometimes find, what you find out in a situation like that is that, in fact, once you have had this, once you have started a romantic relationship of someone, you see with someone, you see other sides of theirs that you hadn't seen before, and you may not like what you see. A romantic relationship brings in a kind of intimacy of bodies in addition to the intimacy of minds, or if you want to be a little more pompous about it, the intimacy of souls that friendship brings along. And that complicates things. It could become something wonderful. Sometimes, for example, people say, my husband or my wife or whatever is my best friend. And I think I tend to believe it perfectly well. But it also, I've seen many cases, not to mention my own, where the situation has been disastrous.
And I think beyond whether husbands and wives can be best friends or not, I think that the question also posed is, can men and women be friends if it's just platonic?
Yes, I think there can be both pure friends and friends who also have a romantic relationship with one another. I don't think there's something that makes that impossible. But by the way, what makes things like that impossible is, by and large, not biology. I don't think it's just because, you know, one is a male and the other is a female. I think a lot of that has to do with contemporary ideas about the relationship between the sexes. And if we are brought up by thinking that the other sex are more or less strange people, as we very often, unfortunately, are these days, the relationship between sexes becomes much more fraught, much more complicated than it should, I think, than it should be.
There was a report a few years ago, and in it, I remember vaguely, men said that their best friend was their wife, and they didn't really have very many close friends beyond that. Maybe no close friends beyond their spouse, their wife being their best friend. And some experts are saying that's really not all that good. What do you think?
I agree with that. I think that having your spouse be your best friend, if it interferes with your having relationships outside your immediate household, is not a good thing. I think we need to have very we need to have the different levels of friends that we talked about earlier. We can't concentrate everything on one person. That seems to me to limit your horizon in a way that I don't think is a really good thing. You want to be able to receive input, receive stimulation from a number of people so that you can develop in different ways. And we always develop. We develop even we do so less after a certain age. We still continue to develop until the day we die. If your only friend is your spouse, well, then, you know, you're not going to be changing all that much, because if you're only influenced one another, you're going to tend to become either very, very close or you're going to end up hating each other.
Let's take another call from Barbara in Eau Claire. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I first want to say I think the comment by Professor Nehamas that friends are like beauty and art is just wonderful insight. And I have, all through my life, retained almost all the friends I've ever made, and I'm 75 years old. And interestingly, I look back, and I also say they're like chapters of my life. And I refer to my Buffalo buddies where I grew up, and they stand out. And I think, what is it that's kept us together? It's our roots, but it's more than that. We have this amazing sense of humor. I've never developed it with any other friends where we have this humor. I don't know if it's from backgrounds that were immigrant in some way or what it was, but it stands out to me. And wherever I've gone, I seem to make friends a lot, and I mean close friends. I've traveled abroad and have worked in various countries and lived in the States. But I also want to say that I do crave independence, and I need a lot of downtime and privacy, maybe mm-hmm. it's just to be. And I also was fascinated with the remark the professor made about independence, because sometimes it's difficult. I have to explain to my friends I really need space in my life. But I'm very, very fortunate, and I think it does take a person that also tries to keep up friendships. Oh, the other point is, it's amazing how you can lose touch or not communicate for quite a while, and then you go right back to the deep friendship you had to begin with.
Yeah, that's right. And Barbara, I just want to clarify, you said my Buffalo friends, and it took me for a loop for a second. You mean the community Buffalo?
No, yes, Buffalo, New York. My Buffalo buddies.
Yeah, okay.
We are very, very different. But we grew up in the same neighborhood, and I have three very, very close ones. We're all still alive and well. And we have this extraordinary sense of humor, which has never been duplicated to me. I must say, even in the Midwest, I don't have that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of amusing to me.
I love it. And just because we have just about a minute or so to go, Alexander. So independence is important, and right?
Independence is absolutely crucial, and that's one reason why having more than one friend is very important, because if it's only one person, then you can't really be independent by attaching yourself even temporarily to others. I did want to say something about the sense of humor that your caller mm-hmm. made, however, which I think is a wonderful point, because a shared sense of humor is something that brings people together in a small kind of society. And that's what friendship also is, to be able to share the same kind of jokes, to be able to recognize that the other's sense of humor is like yours, is one of very, very crucial aspects of creating a friendship. So when your friend said that, the only caller said that she and her friends share a sense of humor, I think that was a wonderful, wonderful thing to say.
Yeah, just a minute to go. What can we do today to make the most of our friendships?
Open yourself up to them, but always, always be a little careful as well.
Will do. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you very much to producer Kai Brito and to Bill Martins and to Brianne Chasso. Thank you for listening. Our guest was Alexander Nehamas, a professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton University. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.